This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What is up, Wisconsin and beyond? My name's Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am so excited to have my next guest joining us because an absolute bomb dropped today. Perhaps better late than never might be the theme. If you haven't heard yet, folks, former Supreme Court Justice, Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gabelman, has today been charged with attorney misconduct by the organization that is charged with investigating attorneys in the state of Wisconsin, ensuring that we all comply with our ethical obligations. That organization's name is the Office of Lawyer Regulation, referred to by lawyers as the OLR. Again, the OLR has filed formal charges of attorney misconduct against former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gabelman for his conduct, I'll say misconduct, in the manner in which he executed the Robin Voss requested and funded quote-unquote investigation into baseless conspiracy theories about the 2020 election, wasting upwards of $1 million in taxpayer funds, violating open records laws along the way, engaging in intimidation of public officials, and frankly, lying to the court and making a complete jerk of himself. Yeah, lawyers aren't supposed to act like that. With me today and with each and every one of you is the General Counsel for Law Forward, an organization in the state of Wisconsin that looks to protect your voting rights as well as our civil rights writ large and help hold those in power accountable. His name's Jeff Mandel. He's been on the show before, friend of mine, now a friend of yours. Jeff, welcome back and thanks so much for sharing some of your day with us.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. It's great to be here today.
Now, this complaint by the OLR against former Justice Gabelman, this was largely in response to a 100-page letter complaint that Law Forward filed. Can you tell us about the specific allegations that your organization made about former Justice Gabelman's conduct of this pseudo-investigation?
I'm not sure that we have enough time for you to want me to detail all of them. Let me put it this way. Mr. Gabelman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. He took on from the beginning a matter that was beyond his competency and knowledge. He violated his duties to his client. He lied to courts in two different counties, and actually multiple courts in Dane County. He mistreated and lied to opposing counsel. He lied to the public and misled them. He told his client one thing and then testified in the legislature to the exact opposite. If you remember, and I know you know, Maggie, the attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. In some states, it's really short, right? I'm going to follow the rules and support the Constitution. In Wisconsin, it's quite voluminous. Our grievance to the OLR showed that Mr. Gabelman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
It's pretty remarkable. I have been basically freaked out about this in terms of what does this say to other lawyers, not just in the state of Wisconsin, but nationwide. We look at Rudy Giuliani, who's frankly, disbarment, I think, is yet to become permanent in the state of New York. We look at John Eastman in California, and my thinking was, where is the OLR in the state of Wisconsin, and how have they not charged former Justice Gabelman yet? How long was the period of time, Jeff, between when your organization filed what I'm going to call sort of an omnibus complaint on behalf of basically every single last taxpayer in the state of Wisconsin and every citizen, and the OLR's action today?
Well, we filed that complaint on March 2nd of 2023. And so it has been an extensive period. But what I would say is that the wheels of justice grind slowly, but they move forward. And today's complaint shows that in that time, OLR conducted a thorough, careful, and extensive investigation. There are 10 separate counts in this complaint today. And I expect that the Supreme Court will be very, very interested to read this.
And who decides in the end whether or not Justice Gableman, former Justice Gableman, faces any sanction for this volume of wrongdoing? This, as you put it, Jeff, violation of every sentence of the attorney oath that every lawyer in the state of Wisconsin takes.
Ultimately, that will be decided by our Wisconsin Supreme Court. They run the bar. They are in charge of enforcing attorney ethics. So we have this complaint today. There will be a process for Mr. Gableman to contest those parts of it that he thinks are inaccurate. And ultimately, the Wisconsin Supreme Court will decide.
Now, in the ordinary course, and this certainly is anything but ordinary, Jeff, in the ordinary course, how long does it take for the complaint to be received by the lawyer, for the lawyer to respond? Does the OLR conduct a hearing? Who conduct? Is there an, does it immediately go to the Supreme Court? What's the process here? What's the timeline on that process so people listening know what to expect?
Sure. What happens now is Mr. Gableman will receive a copy of the complaint against him, and he will have a period of about 20 days to file a response about whether he agrees with the factual allegations that the complaint lays out or not. If he chooses to contest them, there will be an evidentiary hearing before an independent referee. So the OLR acts as the prosecutor. Mr. Gableman is entitled to counsel and can defend himself. And there will be a report with factual findings and a recommendation on what the proper sanctions are, and that will go to the Supreme Court for its review. So this could take anywhere from a few months to another year, year and a half. But what is most important, ultimately, is that we will get to the end of this, and there will be accountability. As you said at the beginning, it is more important now than ever, as we head into the new Trump administration, that we make clear in Wisconsin and beyond that bad actors who violate the law, who flout ethical rules, will be held accountable.
It's interesting to me, Jeff, that this is occurring on the very day that the prosecutors, the district attorney's office in the Manhattan criminal case against Donald Trump for those 34 criminal counts, today was receiving briefing about whether or not Donald Trump's sentencing should proceed. And one of the responses that I have had to the election, which frankly for me has always predated the election, is for every single one of us and every single one of you that are listening, while the national political dialogue tends to dominate our news, it is what happens at your state and local government that has the most direct and immediate impact on the quality of your life. And I think so too here to an extent, right? That here under each state is responsible for attorney licensure. And so it is up to the states and their different attorney governance structures to ensure that attorneys are not engaging in these wholesale ethical violations. And we've seen attorneys, again, you're not supposed to make a filing without having a reasonable factual basis. You're not supposed to say untrue things in courts when you have been sworn. Those are all sanctionable actions. And we've seemingly seen scores of this sort of unethical behavior by lawyers across the country by those aligned with the former president. You mentioned that there's going to be a, quote, independent referee that will hear what I assume will be Mr. Gableman's disputing of this complaint of attorney misconduct filed by the OLR. Who decides who the referee is? How are they selected? What pool do they come from? How do we ensure that they act in a nonpartisan, unbiased way?
These are great questions. And unfortunately, this is not my regular area of practice. I am not usually involved in ethical complaints and misconduct here in
Wisconsin.
That's
a good thing, Jeff. Knowing the particulars here is always a good sign. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. My understanding is the Supreme Court will appoint the referee. And like with any judge or proceeding in Wisconsin, each side will have the chance to say, I don't like that person. I want a different person once, one substitution per side. So hopefully this will proceed pretty quickly. And as I said, the referee will make the initial recommendation, but the Supreme Court makes the final judgment. And so I think we can be confident. To your larger point, I could not agree more that we should be looking to our state and local governments for this kind of enforcement. And we are in a good place in Wisconsin. We not only see this here today, but in just a couple of weeks, we will have the first hearing in the criminal prosecution of the lawyers who created the fraudulent elector scheme here in Wisconsin in 2020. So accountability is having a moment here in Wisconsin.
And accountability, again, on the state and local levels. I think that point cannot be emphasized enough, as well as the fact that former Justice Gableman will have due process, quite robust due process, ultimately being heard, as Jeff has explained to all of us, by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It certainly makes the Wisconsin Supreme Court election in April, this coming April 2025, certainly makes that important on a whole number of fronts. If you care about reproductive freedom, it matters. Certainly, if you care about voting transparency and accountability, it matters. And now this issue as well. Do you think that this will get some airplay or be brought into that Supreme Court election this coming April?
I think it might. I mean, it's not a partisan issue. It's not even an ideological issue. This is really about good governance. At the same time, this is not Mr. Gableman's first time at the Supreme Court over this issue. There was a major ethics complaint about his 2008 successful campaign to join the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And ultimately, because he could not participate in adjudicating that, that ethics complaint failed on a 3-3 deadlock. So I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes something of conversation as we look toward what the Supreme Court will be hearing. This case will certainly be something that comes up before the Supreme Court either next year or the year after.
Folks, that is Jeff Mandel. He is the general counsel at Law Forward, discussing the complaint filed today against former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman for his conduct of the Voss-funded and requested pseudo-investigation into the election of 2020. We're going to come back with Jeff, discuss the hearing before the Supreme Court yesterday, considering Megan Wolf, the executive director of the Wisconsin Election Commission, for holding over in that position. Republicans often say there's a rule for thee and a different rule for me. We discuss next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I broadcast from the WAUK. If you've been looking for some civic media swag, go to civicmedia.us. Click on the store button in the upper right-hand corner. Go get yourself some AUK swag. AUK, of course, goes out all across southeastern Wisconsin on 540 AM. But you can catch me anywhere in the state by downloading the Civic Media app for free or finding your favorite Civic Media local talk station. My guest this half hour, Jeff Mandel, General Counsel of Law Forward. He's here next to talk about a fairly consequential Wisconsin Supreme Court oral argument that occurred yesterday. The argument regards whether or not the current executive director of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, woman by the name of Megan Wolf, can be allowed to remain in her position. But there's some wrinkles here, and there also happens to be a Wisconsin Supreme Court case back when conservatives held the majority on the court. Jeff, help us understand what's going on here and why it matters.
Sure. It's a really big deal for two reasons, and you touched on them. First, Megan Wolf is a national model and award-winning, highly recognized election administrator. We are lucky to have Ms. Wolf here in Wisconsin leading our elections in a nonpartisan, fair way that makes sure that everyone who is registered and authorized to vote has the opportunity to do so. And this is an effort of the legislature trying to get rid of her based on big lie conspiracies from 2020. There's no truth to any of this. But rather than stand up and denounce those conspiracy theories, the legislature would rather sacrifice Megan Wolf and move on. They were unable to do so. They were foiled in their efforts to do so by the Wisconsin Elections Commission, a bipartisan organization where all six appointed commissioners, including the three Republican appointed commissioners, praised Administrator Wolf's work and said she should be reappointed. But the Senate had already promised that if her nomination was sent back to the Senate, she would be voted down and thrown out of her job. And so three of the commissioners refused to vote. They abstained, said there's no need, maybe there's not even any mechanism for us to nominate someone right now. And Administrator Wolf has stayed in her job. The Senate and everyone in the legislature admits that that is legal. So what's the dispute? Well, the dispute, as you mentioned, is that 2 years ago, right? You said there was a Supreme Court case. It's so long ago. It was two whole years.
Two whole years ago.
Two whole years ago, there was a dispute about an appointee to the Natural Resources Board, which oversees the Department of Natural Resources and our environment here in Wisconsin. This was a Scott Walker appointee who was appointed for a six-year term. And when that term ended, Governor Evers appointed a replacement. And this gentleman, Dr. Prehn, did not want to leave. He decided he was essential. And the fact that the statute said his term was only 6 years didn't matter. So Attorney General Call filed a lawsuit to have Dr. Prehn removed and let the new appointee sit. And the legislature resisted that lawsuit. They defended it. They said, no, no, no. Only if Dr. Prehn chooses to resign, or only if we, the Senate, choose to confirm the new appointee, does Dr. Prehn's term end. Otherwise, he can hold over indefinitely. And so basically, that's what's happening here. There's not a new nominee. Megan Wolf is holding over. The Senate admits that that's lawful, and yet they want the Supreme Court to come in and somehow force Megan Wolf out. And at yesterday's hearing, Justice Karofsky said, this is an example of be careful what you wish for.
Right.
She was speaking to the legislature's lawyer, and she said, your clients came here. They defended what Dr. Prehn did, even though it was profoundly anti-democratic. They defended it, and they won, and that's the law in Wisconsin now, and now you're upset, and you want to be able to keep that, but you somehow now want to be able to get rid of this other appointee you don't like, and that's not the way it works, and I don't expect that that's going to prevail at the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
I'll be interesting to see exactly how the decision is crafted, Jeff, and if we can, because all of you folks out there, you know I like a little wonk. Because one of the key factual distinctions in this case, which may allow the majority, however constituted, to dig into the substance here a bit and try to correct the irrational reasoning of the court under the Prehn decision, is that indeed Megan Wolf was not formally appointed because the Election Commission effectively deadlocked, right? Unlike the appointment made by Governor Evers to the Natural Resources Board. Do I have that correct as a small but potentially significant factual distinction between the two cases?
You do. For most executive positions in the state of Wisconsin, the governor gets to nominate people and the Senate gets to confirm them. This here is a little bit of an anomaly. The Elections Commission gets to make this nomination, and they have not made one. As you say, three members of the Elections Commission, they abstained. It's not that they voted against reappointing Megan Wolf. What they actually said is, if you look carefully at the statute, it says we're only supposed to act if there's a vacancy. And there isn't a vacancy because Administrator Wolf is holding over under the Prane case. There's no vacancy. So what those three members of the commission said is, we actually can't even vote to appoint someone right now. And that's where we stand. I think it is a big distinction. I would also note that the legislature, while yelling and screaming in court yesterday that this is a violation of the separation of powers and Administrator Wolf is holding everyone hostage, or members of the Elections Commission are holding everyone hostage, the legislature could just change the statute about how someone is appointed or what the conditions under which they are appointed are, and they've made no effort to do so. It's really just a lot of blather and nonsense to cover for their own hypocrisy.
Sound and fury signifying nothing. Jeff, very briefly, what do you think the outcome of the case will be?
I think that Administrator Wolf is going to be able to stay in her position and hold over.
I agree 100%. Megan Wolf is going nowhere, and that's for the betterment of our election system and each and every one of you, the voters in Wisconsin. It matters, and she is an extraordinary professional. We all owe her our thanks. My thanks to you, Jeff Mandel, General Counsel of Law Forward. We'll hear from you again soon, because I'm sure there'll be more happening in short order. I'm going to come back, share some personal reflections on how things have changed over the last month or so based on my own experiences. You're not going to want to miss this. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Please don't stop the music. You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, I don't know about you. When I'm cleaning the house, I have to have some good tunes on. And Civic Media's got you covered, whether you're going for a run, cleaning, just hanging out with your friends. You're going to want to check out one of our great music station lineups. We got the best of the 80s, 90s, and more. Just open up the app and search for 105.7 CFW in Eau Claire or 99.7 Max FM in Baraboo if that's your jam, or if country's more your thing, we've got that too. That's 98Q Country Park Falls, 105.5 WIRI Wisconsin Rapids, and RCO in Richland Center. You can check out all of that. And of course, the 60s and the 70s on Racine at WRJN. I love the music lineup that we've got here at Civic, but today it is talk and more talk. I've got some thoughts for you all coming up here, but I did want to share this bit of breaking news. President-elect Donald Trump will nominate Dr. Mehmet Oz to lead the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. I'm just going to say this. Y'all know how big of a department that is. It's huge. Being a talk show host does not prepare Dr. Oz to lead that department. It is a massive administrative undertaking. You would want someone that has, you know, some experience running an enormous department. Oz doesn't have that. So if you or someone you know or love relies on Medicare and Medicaid, I'd be a little bit worried. But folks, I wanted to spend some time, and I'm going to put down a trigger warning here. I wanted to talk about some of my own personal experiences that have occurred in the last month. And I'm going to tell you kind of what my takeaway from this is. And again, a bit of a trigger warning for all you listening out there. And I'm going to ask folks, if you're on the text and call lines, to be patient with me, because I do want to share this story. Now, I'm not suggesting that my experiences are a statistically relevant sample. They're not. But I can tell all of you that I find what has gone on over the last 4 weeks to be quite extraordinary. So without beating around the bush much longer, let me tell you what's happened. In three separate circumstances, completely unrelated, I have had three different men basically forcibly grope me in public. Three different men in completely unrelated circumstances forcibly grope me in public. One was a stranger. Two I have known for more than 15 years. The two that I know I would consider friends. Now, I want to give you a bit more context because there were some very eerie similarities between all three of these incidents. In each incident, I was seated and the man came up behind me. Secondly, in each incident, the man who was doing this at some point during these interactions leaned over and said something to the effect of, I bet you don't want me doing this, or, hey, is this making you a little uncomfortable? In each of the three instances, because I was seated and the man was standing, because of the geometry of the interaction, it would have been really difficult for me to physically extricate myself from the situation. In one instance, I was eating, sitting at a high top. In the other instance, I was seated outside. And in the other instance, I was seated at a bar. Again, two of these men I have known and I would consider friends, though not close friends, but two individuals that I'm certainly close with. Now, I want to be really clear about this. As all of you who are regular listeners know, I'm 6 feet tall. I'm an ex-athlete. I speak my mind. I'm outspoken. I don't take, I don't suffer fools, and I don't like to take any crap from anybody. But I will tell you, despite the proximity of each and every one of these incidents to one another, in each incident, I was so shocked about what was happening to me that I basically froze. This is not uncommon. I literally couldn't, my brain rejected, oh my God, what? Wait a minute. Why is this guy's hands? What? Oh my God. And your brain is flooded with just a surge of stress hormones. And often you freeze when these things happen. I certainly did. I also think, you know, the fact that I was seated, and again, just the physical difficulty I would have had extricating myself added to the fact that I didn't, for whatever set of reasons, my brain was frozen, my body was frozen. I didn't have leverage, if you will, in a very basic sense. I really, again, could not believe what was happening to me. Here's the other thing I want to make very, very clear. And every single woman I know will tell you the same thing. When these things happen to you, there is no mistaking the intent. You cannot mistake, oh, that was just an accidental boob graze, if you will. Oh my goodness, that was just a good friend who just, you know, accidentally got his hand in the wrong place. That's not what happened in these instances. This was specific, prolonged, and a clear groping. I'm not going to get into the particulars because I don't know if I'd hold it together on the air, but I will tell you there is simply no mistaking when this happens to you if you are a woman. And the fact that in all three of these instances, that the man said something along the lines of, bet you don't like this, is this a little uncomfortable? They knew what they were doing. It was an assertion at some level of dominance, of intimidation. I also want to make very clear to anyone out there that holds on to antiquated notions about women asking for it. All three of these men were married, and married to the two that I knew, married to women that I know and know well, women who I would also consider to be friends. So I want to be very clear about what happened. This has gone on in the last month. Two of these instances happened almost back to back. Now, why am I sharing this? I'm sharing this because I'm 47 years old. And after this happened the third time, I had to sit down and think, when is the last time something like this happened to me? And that would take me back more than 20 years. I would have to go back to my early 20s. So the question I'm going to ask all of you out there, is this a coincidence? I don't think so. I think the atmosphere that has been created in this country, where men feel comfortable texting things like your body, my choice, when men feel comfortable on social media referring to roaming gangs of rapists, when a civilly convicted sexual assaulter is going to be our next president, when a sitting Supreme Court justice has been credibly accused of sexual assault, when our next president has been credibly accused of sexual assault over 15 times, when the nominee to be attorney general has investigations relating to having sex for money with minors, when the nominee to be the Secretary of Defense paid a woman when she alleged that he raped her, when these are the men that we choose as leaders, there is a message that is being sent to women and a message that is being sent to men. And that message is, you women are not full participatory citizens or human beings. Your rights don't matter as much as my rights do. When the vice president-elect of the United States pals around with men and takes his cues from folks in the religious right movement that say that the 19th Amendment should be repealed, that women do not deserve the right to vote, this sends a message. It authorizes this kind of behavior. Now, I can look anecdotally even at my show over the last 2 weeks. I'm getting more conservative callers and texters. Maybe this is gloating. Maybe this is, Maggie, let me rub your face in it. But I will also tell you that some of the texts I read and some of the stuff I don't. And I'll let you fill in the blanks about some of the stuff that I don't read. So regardless of your party, regardless of whom you voted for, I have a favor to ask. To every single man out there, please stop treating women this way. To women out there, please stand up for one another. And I will say this, I am a white woman, a lawyer with a radio show. I am amongst the most empowered women that you will ever meet. And yet. So if this can happen to me, I guarantee you it is happening to someone else you know and love. And this is completely unacceptable. The environment in which this behavior has become implicitly, or I will say explicitly, acceptable needs to be rejected. These nominees from Donald Trump that have these kinds of allegations leveled against them, we need to be concerned about. Because the only democracy that I want to be a part of is where my rights are respected, where my actual body is respected. And right now, I don't feel that way. Right now, I have three examples in the last 4 weeks where two men that are friends of mine, whose wives I know, and a third whom I had never met before, thought it was okay to invade my body's physical space, to put their hands where they damn well knew they didn't belong. And no, for the texters asking me, I didn't slug them. As soon as it was over, I got up and left. Because frankly, I don't know what men like that, how they would react to me setting my boundary again. That is what I'm concerned about. So I'm going to ask all of you men out there, when you hear men deride women in a locker room, in private, in a boardroom, say something. Because the women you love deserve it. The women you don't know and the women you may not yet love deserve your support. This is unacceptable. When we come back, I'm going to turn the page. Got some other breaking news. A little lighter news. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. The last segment of the day is next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Just a little respect for each and every woman, regardless of party or politics. It's the bare minimum, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to thank all of the texters, everybody out there for your responses to my stories and sharing. I just want to make this clear. I have no idea what the political leanings of any of these. Well, I do know one of them. He's a big Trumper, but I don't know about the other two. And frankly, my point is, I don't think any of that is actually relevant. The point that I was trying to make in sharing my story and asking, do you think this is a coincidence, is that where we are as a country, even if someone thinks they're a progressive or a Democrat, that the environment has so degraded and it has become so misogynistic. It is so returning to a place of objectification of women, where women should and can and only be measured, frankly, by our sexuality or our ability to procreate and produce children. And the sort of epidemic of men being permitted as leaders who have well-documented, substantiated allegations of sexual assault has so degraded and eroded our culture, for lack of a better term, our expectations of behavior towards one another, that this behavior is now, at least by my anecdotal past 4 weeks, becoming far more prevalent. And this is the problem that I'm trying to point out. And men out there, again, regardless of party, ask a woman you know and respect, hey, has this ever happened to you? What happened? Were you able to do something about it? Because I guarantee their responses are probably fairly in line with mine, where your brain floods with chemicals and you freeze. So very briefly, my thanks to Michaela from West Bend, a texter from the 608, a texter from Maguanago, Sherry from Horicon, Dan from Elkhorn, Jeannie from Eau Claire, thank you, Gary from Madison, Kelly from Madison, Bill from Green Bay, Gary from Madison, Daddy-O from Windsor, and Kathleen from Libertyville, thank you all very, very much for your support. But the women that need support, because I'm moving forward, this was part of my process, was sharing with all of you, all women need your support. We need to make standing up against this sort of behavior a separate question from politics. And we all need to make sure that we are standing up against this kind of behavior, creating a space where women can talk about these things and be believed. And we need to say no to nominees like Pete Hegseth and Matt Gaetz, because that is an unacceptable way for men in leadership to behave, period. Full stop. By the way, Pete Hegseth was married when the alleged encounter occurred. For the sake of ending a bit on a different note this afternoon, I wanted to share with you this breaking news. Apparently, and much to my chagrin, Willie Adames has rejected the Brewers' last offer. It looks like Willie is moving all the more closer to leaving the Brewers. But I wanted to remind us all of a bit of good news that came out a couple of weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to talk about it on the air. And that is the fact that Brewers' Bryce Terang not only won the Golden Glove, he won the 2024 Platinum Glove Award for the entire National League. If you don't know what a Platinum Glove is, it's given to the best overall fielder in any position in each league. Terang beat out Chris Sale, Patrick Bailey, Christian Walker, Matt Chapman, Ezekiel Tovar, Ian Happ, a whole bunch of like incredible, as well as his teammate Sal Frelick, really talented fielders. Excuse me. He led all major league fielders, with 22 defensive runs saved in 2024. He also led all NL fielders in Baseball Reference's defensive wins above replacement stat. These awards are given out based on statistical analysis. But on the backs of Sal Frelick and Bryce Terang, the Brewers also won the NL Golden Glove Team Award for the second year in a row. And here's the last bit of good news for all of you and trivia. Bryce Terang is the first player in Brewers history to win a Platinum Glove and only the second baseman for the Brewers to win a Golden Glove. I don't know about you all, but I will be looking forward to the start of the 2025 baseball season with bated breath. We'll see how the Packers get through the rest of the season. I'll always throw in a little sports because I love it. And we need a little release from all of this politics. We'll hopefully have some yucks because I think a little overtime with Maggie Dawn and Dom Salvia is coming up next, because Dom Salvia has got the great show that follows mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. That's coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I can't think of a better day to end the way I always do. Like this. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together for women. Take care, y'all.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.